What is going on, everybody? March is finally here. It is tournament time, and we are here to break down the 2019 NCAA tournament, letting you know who we should be picking for this year. This is the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire. That's right here on NumberFire.com and the NumberFire Podcast Network. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com, here to talk with you about what you should be doing for your brackets this year. We're going to have a rundown of general tournament strategies for this year, discuss how the size of your pool influences what picks you should make and your strategies for the tournament, and we'll go region by region and outline how we're attacking this year's bracket. To help me do all that for the third consecutive year, got two very special guests here on the line, starting off with Keith Goldner. He is the chief analyst at NumberFire, also the director of data science for FanDuel. You can find him on Twitter at Keith Goldner. Keith, big time of year for you. How are you doing today? And thank you for joining us.
I'm doing great. Happy to be here again. Not the best year for our Northwestern Wildcats, but otherwise, I'm very excited for this week.
I think we kind of, you know, dried up all of our luck in year one, because that was the first time we did this podcast. NU is in the tournament, almost beat Gonzaga, if not for a weird, you know, some weird calls at the end there and a technical. But hey, you know, I mean, I would say there's always next year, but I'm not really feeling it, Keith.
Yeah, it's just been downhill since then.
And we're also joined here by Dr. Ed Fang. He had his a PhD in mathematics from Stanford and literally wrote the book on how to win your NCAA tournament pool. You can find that on Amazon, also by going to thepowerrank.com, which is his website, or just searching for how to win your NCAA tournament pool. Ed, it's also the host of Pure Bracket Wisdom, a podcast breaking down the NCAA tournament, and it is available on Apple Podcasts by searching for Pure Bracket Wisdom. You can find Ed on Twitter at the Power Rank. Ed, long time no talk. How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, Jim. Always excited to talk to you and Keith about hoops and brackets.
Absolutely. And Ed, you're out there in Ann Arbor, and a little bit more exciting for you this year because you had some excitement all the way down to Sunday. So how you feeling about the Wolverines as we get set for tournament time?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great team. They, you know, play defense at an elite level about 95% of the time. And they can go really far if they hit some shots.
Absolutely.
The shots haven't necessarily been there in certain games this year. But yeah, a really strong team. Really excited about this program.
And it should be a fun discussion as we break down all of the regions, which we will do in just one second here. And of course, we're going to start things off, though, with the general tournament strategy. It's kind of the reason that I want to have Ed on here every year is because, again, wrote the book on this, and there is so much variance and so much that changes the way you fill out your bracket based on what type of pool you're in for various reasons, whether it be pool size, what type of people, what fans are in that pool. So, Ed, I wanted to start things off here with you broadly and discuss what we need to know before before filling out our brackets. Specifically, how does the size of the pool influence strategies for the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I mean, pool size is a huge thing, right? I mean, I think this is something that people don't think about often, but you know, if you use analytics and you're against any one other person, like you have a really good chance of winning. I've done some calculations where I essentially pull a bracket at random from the ESPN data set that have, data on who picks who. And if you pick the higher ranked team by my numbers or NumberFire or anyone who does a good job with analytics, you know, you have like an 85, 87% chance to beat that one other person. But now if you're in a person with 10 people, you know, that drops to about 50%. And if you're in a 30 person pool, I think it drops to about 1 in 3. And then if you're a 100 person pool, it probably drops to less than like 10%. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the numbers are going to change year by year, but the fact that your odds of winning decrease rapidly don't. And you're going to see that. So you want to tend to get into the smaller size pools. I feel like 100 is kind of a upper limit. And you want to avoid, and you certainly want to avoid the 1,000-person right. pools. There are people out there that will give you bracket advice about those 1,000-person pools. I would ignore them.
Yeah. So what's kind of the sweet spot for you, Ed? You know, what kind of tournaments or what kind of pools are you seeking out where you think that your knowledge can be best leveraged?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you just want to win a pool, like, get 9 of your friends in the office that don't know anything about college basketball and put one together. That's your best chance to win. You're going to do the best there. But oftentimes it's easier to just answer an email. And so for that, you know, you're looking for pools that are, you know, 30 to 50. And then we can talk about kind of the contrarian strategies where you're trying to fade what other people are picking as champion.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of it. And thankfully, we do have data on that. If you go to ESPN and check out their tournament challenge page, there is a tab for who picked whom. And what that shows you is how often the public is picking each team to advance and to eventually win the national championship. Before I break down the 2019 tournament specifically, Keith, I want to go to you. When you look at, you know, this data, how does that influence what you're doing as you're filling out your bracket? You see this public data. How do you compare that to NumberFire data to inform your decisions?
Yeah, so it's similar to what Ed was saying, which is you want to look at what the public is doing, and then you compare that to our numbers for the probability of different teams advancing. And if the public is higher than what we're saying, then that means the public is on that team and you should probably avoid them. And if the public is lower than what we're saying, that means you have there's a market inefficiency there and you have an edge. So this year, for example, I think Gonzaga is only like picked 7.5% of the time to win it all. And we have them at like 19%. So there's a huge advantage, according to our numbers, if you pick Gonzaga and win it all, because you have that 12% spread between you and what the public is picking.
Absolutely. And that is a key thing. Once again, you can find that by going to ESPN's tournament page, their tournament challenge page, checking out who picked whom there. You have similar tools on Yahoo as well. It's probably important to pick the specific site where you are playing to look at what the public is doing there, because there may be differences between the specific sites. Ed, before you fill out your bracket, what other information do you want to know about your opponents outside of just how large the pool is?
Yeah, well, so first of all, I don't fill out any brackets because I haven't been invited to a pool in a long time.
I can't imagine why.
I wouldn't invite me either. But but in the general U sense, you know, geography is just such a huge thing this year, specifically because, you know, I'm up here in Michigan, and if you're in a Michigan pool, mm-hmm. I mean, there's no one that's not going to be like, oh, I'm just going to put a second bracket with Michigan to win because you want to cheer for your bracket, right?
Right.
So that definitely skews the odds. If you are anywhere near the state of North Carolina, you're going to get a lot of brackets with Duke and North Carolina as champion. And, you know, I mean, Duke is kind of a prohibitive public favorite,
right?
As you know, as they should be. But the idea is, like, if you're in North Carolina and you pick Duke and you're in a, let's say, 100-person pool, let's say 80 other people pick Duke. So now, and if Duke wins, everyone gets those 32 points for champion. Now, but you have 80 other people that can get lucky on you and beat you in those earlier rounds. And that's exactly why you want to not pick Duke, to optimize your chances. And that's essentially what my book talks about.
And instead of fighting against 80 people, if you pick someone other than Duke, you're fighting with 20 people if Duke right. doesn't wind up winning the national championship, if they get beat early. So it's kind of just playing the odds game and trying to whittle down the competition you're going up against here. And let's talk about Duke specifically, because they will be the big story of this strategy for 2019. Because right now, everything is all about Duke. They, on ESPN, the public has them winning 43% of the time right now as of Monday afternoon. They get to the Final Four 73.5% of the time. So the public really into Duke, but that's not exactly the easiest region that they are in here. So Keith, I want to start here with you. When you're looking at a pool size here, in what size of field do you start to get in before you consider fading Duke solely due to popularity?
Yeah, I think I would fade Duke in most cases mm-hmm. due to popularity. If you're in a very small pool, you could take them. If you're in a UNC pool, you could take them. But generally, I would probably be fading them this year. We have them at NumberFire at only about 20% to win it all. Now, that being said, it's skewed a little bit because of the Zion injury now that he's back. I think it's probably higher than that, but I don't think it's quite 43%. The FanDuel Sportsbook had it at around 33%, which seems more reasonable to me. So in most cases, I would say above 10 people, I'd probably be fading Duke for one of those teams that has a lot more of an opportunity compared to the public.
Yeah, as of Monday afternoon, Duke is +220 to win on FanDuel Sportsbooks, around 31%. And even when you do factor in Zion being back, which the sportsbook does, it's still about 10 percentage points lower than where the public is at. So what about for you, Ed? Same thought process for once you get above 10 or so people, you're fading Duke?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Duke should be the favorite.
Right.
They should have the highest probability to win this tournament. And, you know, a lot of the kind of the pure numbers aren't necessarily going to say that. But if you watch this team play, ever since they obliterated Kentucky in the opening game of the season, they've had that mantle of, you know, team with the highest upside. And until Zion blew out his shoe and hurt his knee, like, they were playing like that. So, you know, when I was doing the Pure Bracket Wisdom podcast, like, Duke was the last team preview I did because I needed to see Zion and was going to be back to his normal self. But there's the difference between, you know, picking who's going to win the tournament and then trying to win your pool.
Absolutely.
And those are two, and it's really important to understand that those are two entirely different things.
And there are a lot of games in the tournament. Like, there is a lot of room for variance, for foul trouble for Zion. Like, there are so many factors that could come into play that could upset. You know, having it at 43% is just such a large number. So, Keith, you know, looking at other public pick percentages here on ESPN, we got UNC at 14% to win it all. Gonzaga is at 7.4%. UVA, 6.5%. Then we get down to the two and the three seeds with Kentucky, Michigan State, Tennessee. When you compare the public pick percentages to what NumberFire's numbers say, is there a team that you're focusing on as one you want to target as being your champion for this year?
Yeah, there are a couple. At NumberFire this year, it's really interesting. We kind of have these two tiers of teams that we think can win it. We have the top tier, which are all right around the 20% in Duke, Gonzaga, and UVA. And then two more at UNC and Michigan State who are just above 10%. And then there's a pretty significant drop. To me, I love Gonzaga, and even more this year, I really love UVA in particular, building off the narrative last year since they lost in the first round. I think a lot of people will be terrified to pick them. And as a result, on ESPN, it's like 6%. So you compare that 6% to our 19% that we have them with the chance to win it, and they're a great team. And then another team that that I mentioned already is Michigan State. They're almost always a pretty big public team, in particular because they're in Duke's portion of the bracket this year. They're significantly lower, and that's another team that I could see as a good team to take it all.
And what about for you, Ed? You've got your own rankings over at the Power Rank as well. When you look at those numbers and look at what those analytics say, which team stands out to you as being one that your numbers like and you like more than the public does right now?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely So the one thing to understand, like, you know, all numbers are going to roughly give you the same answers, right? Like, so my stuff is going to look very similar to NumberFire, as it should, because if my stuff looked very different from NumberFire, someone's doing something wrong. So obviously a lot of the same answers that I'm going to give that Keith did. Yeah, I think Virginia's a heck of a team. And they have a heck of a lead player in DeAndre Hunter, who's just a next level talent. And I still don't understand why he's not the consensus second pick in the 2019 draft. And then and then Gonzaga as well. I mean, we have the same top three. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, I am. You mentioned Michigan State, Keith, and Michigan State has been great by the numbers. This is a team that probably has a lower ceiling, just because of, you know, not a lot of NBA talent on that team. So there, you know, I would be more excited about perhaps a Kentucky.
Okay.
A team that has a lot of NBA talent, a team that really gets after it on the defensive end of the floor. And I think that Midwest region, when we start talking about it, I think is a really interesting region.
Let's talk about the regions at large then, and talk about the regions that may stand out as being harder. Ed, I want to start with you here. When you look at these four regions, is there one that stands out to you as being particularly tough, where the variance may be a bit higher than it would be for other regions?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely going with the Midwest here. So you have at the top of the region, you have North Carolina, Kentucky. I would not be at all shocked if either of those teams won the tournament. North Carolina is obviously getting the respect as a one seed. I think Kentucky's a better team, which I've talked about. And then I think what makes this region interesting is some of the lower teams. So Kansas was preseason number one. And what that means, the preseason polls are actually a pretty powerful predictor of tournament performance. They harness this wisdom of crowds and they're a really good assessment of talent. And what that says is, you know, Kansas has got talent. Now, two of their main guys are hurt and haven't played in a while. And even above and beyond that, they've underachieved. But sitting there at a four, right. You got a couple NBA guys. You got a couple of top recruits as freshmen that haven't really played that well. But they're kind of a scary team sitting there at four. And then above and beyond that, like, you have, you know, numbers wise, they're not even supposed to make it to the Sweet 16 because I have Auburn ranked ahead of them. I think I have Auburn like 13th, low teens. Bruce Pearl, a coach that's gotten it done in the tournament. And then, you know, you have a team like Iowa State that is a six seed, and, you know, no one is really impressed with their 23-11 record. But that's another team that's ranked in the teens by my team rankings. I think 14th or 13th or somewhere around there. They're actually ranked higher than Houston, which is another great team. Kelvin Sampson, incredible coach, great defensive system. So I just see a lot of really tough teams in that region. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe North Carolina waltzes through because Kansas falls on its face and, you know, Kentucky gets upset. But I see that as a pretty tough region. And you kind of got to dig past the numbers to make that claim.
Absolutely. And even when you look at number fires numbers, like, the Midwest looks tough because you got Auburn as the five seed. They have great, you know, great numbers at number fire. Houston, good numbers there. Wofford as a seven seed also grades out pretty well. So, Keith, when you look at the depth, I think the depth is probably the best word to use for the Midwest. Does that push you to potentially go for an upset in the Midwest, knowing that there are a good number of teams that have, you know, quality rosters there?
Yeah, definitely. I think in answering your original question, I don't think in previous years there seems to be a clear hardest and easiest portion mm-hmm. of the bracket. I think there was a much better job seeding this year, probably due to the change in selection process. It ended up lining up pretty well with what our rankings had, and as a result, our predicted bracket is pretty chalky. I actually, if you were to ask me, I think this might be the easiest portion of the bracket in terms of the Midwest, but that's just kind of how you define it. There's a lot right. of parity there. Like you said, there's depth. So because of that, we have UNC as the worst number one seed. We have Kentucky as the worst number two seed. But there are those other teams like Auburn and Iowa State and Kansas that Ed mentioned. For me, this is an area where I think it's okay to kind of go wild and pick as contrarian of a pick as you want, because there's going to be so much potential variance in this region. It's going to be a lot harder to predict due to that parity and depth.
And we'll break down that full region in depth later on and let you know which teams Keith and Ed like to come out of there. But in general, let's talk about the ones and two seeds here. We mentioned the Midwest. Maybe you don't want UNC. Maybe you don't want Kentucky. But outside of that, it seems like the top eight teams in Number Fire's power rankings all got either a one or a two seed, which means to me that there is kind of this tier at the top where you got the ones and the two seeds that seems pretty secure. And then there is a tier beneath them. So, Ed, I want to talk to you broadly here. Do you, when you fill out your bracket, see things being fairly chalky on the top end, i.e., you know, mostly ones and twos making it to the Elite Eight? Or, you know, are you trying to change things up here? You know, what are your numbers saying as far as the ones and two seeds for this year?
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like it's going to be pretty chalky in that, you know, those are pretty much the top eight teams. When I run my numbers. So, but again, I don't think that all things are equal amongst those teams. And this is where I try to watch games and get a sense of, you know, which team has a high ceiling, which team has a lower ceiling. And that's where things get interesting. I mean, of those eight teams, I'm probably least excited about Tennessee. I'm probably second least excited about Michigan State, just because I do feel like any of those teams would have an athleticism advantage over that team. A little homerism here, but, like, you know, I do feel like Michigan can make a run, mm-hmm. Based on the way they play defense, and, you know, obviously it comes down to shooting the basketball with that team. But yeah, no, I mean, I think the all those eight teams are very good teams. I usually talk to some of my basketball people. One of them's Adam Stanko over at the Pac-12 Network. And he's usually one that can say, oh, well, the numbers like this team, but I don't really like them as a top team. Mm-hmm. There was none of that this year. Mm-hmm. I think kind of the numbers and the people who watch more basketball than I kind of agree that there's no phonies in this top eight.
Absolutely. And so let's go back over to you, Keith. You mentioned that maybe you want to get a little bit weird in the Midwest, maybe not go with UNC or Kentucky. Even let's include that region here. Is there a three seed or lower you could see making a run at the national title? Or what are your thoughts overall once we get past the ones and the twos?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of parity this year. I know the public is very high on Duke, but I think there definitely is a chance for some of those teams. But like you and Ed both mentioned, the top eight are pretty clear in terms of the numbers. I think if I'm going to go wild in one place, it's that Midwest just because of the depth there. Ed mentioned not being a huge fan of Tennessee, and we'll get into that region in more specifics, but I like Purdue a lot there. So depending on a potential matchup between Purdue and UVA, I could see Purdue potentially making a run.
Ed, you mentioned ceiling as being a thing that you focus on quite a bit. When you look at the teams outside of the ones and the two seeds, which team do you think has that ceiling to make a run and potentially cut down the nets not being a one or a two seed?
I talked a little bit about Kansas and their talent, and I got yelled at this morning saying that they're like a sleeper because they're obviously a blue blood program. So I'm going to give you another one. I really like Virginia Tech.
Okay.
I started running numbers like 10 years ago, and they loved Buzz Williams Marquette's teams. And he is just a great coach. You watch this team play. He moved on to Virginia Tech a couple years ago. They are really well coached. At their best on offense, they move the ball really quick. They get open shots. They hit almost 40% of the three-point shots. Just a really well-coached team. They beat Duke without Zion. But what was remarkable about their game was their ball movement. I don't even think Zion could have chased the ball down the way that they were playing. So anyway, that's a team I really like. Yeah. Well coached, numbers like them. They're kind of borderline top 10, maybe a little bit outside. But that's a team I can see making a run. And obviously, they would play Duke in the Sweet 16, and we would see a rematch of what happened in Plattsburgh.
And we'll talk more about Virginia Tech and the East in just one second as we'll go region by region. But first, got to let you know that it is officially here. Selection Sunday is behind us, and the brackets are set. So there isn't a better time than now to give Number Fire Premium a try. Got everything you need from gambling picks to bracket advice to dominate the best time of year for college hoops. Customizable brackets. You can see win odds for every single game as you pick it. Get your first month of our all-pro package, normally $49.99, for just $19.99 when you sign up today with the promo code BRACKET. That is promo code BRACKET, BRACKET. Visit numberfire.com/premium for more details and to set your bracket, which does allow you to tailor things based on the size of the pool, as we've talked about here today. Let's dive into that East region where the public does have Duke in the Final Four 73.9% of the time. Right now on ESPN, Michigan State is second at 14.4%. Ed, I want to start things off here with you. When you look at this East region, obviously the story is Duke, but what are your overall thoughts on this region at first glance?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that really sticks out in my mind is putting Michigan State down there as the two. Numbers-wise, Keith, I think you probably have them as the best two seed numbers-wise.
Yeah, we do. We have them. They should have been a one seed, essentially.
Right, and that's what my numbers would say. They just overtook Gonzaga in my public rankings. You can kind of complain if you're Michigan State, probably being the best two seed and getting put in with the top team in the tournament. But you're really looking at, quite an epic kind of Elite Eight matchup. And I've seen Michigan State play a bunch. I've seen, they've got three pretty solid wins over Michigan in the last three, four weeks. This team is great offensively. Cassius Winston really leads a great offense, top five when I look at points per possession adjusted for strength of schedule. Still pretty good on the defensive end of the court as well. And it's really been one of Tom Izzo's best coaching jobs. He doesn't have the NBA talent like he did last year. He had a couple lottery picks on that team last year. And numbers wise, they're just better. So And then, you know, I mean, and then we talked about, like, you know, they have a little bit of a lower ceiling. So maybe you could argue that they did, the committee did Duke a favor putting them in that region, and that Duke will be able to overwhelm them with their athleticism when they possibly meet in that Elite Eight game. But either way, I think it's a very interesting region because of those two top teams.
Absolutely. It's a tough region too, to have both those two there, and a really tough draw for Michigan State. But Keith, let's talk about Duke here. We mentioned we're probably not picking them to win the national championship because the public is so heavy on them. So when you look at their road, how far do you see yourself putting Duke? Let's say it's like a 25 person pool, like an office size pool. How far do you see yourself putting Duke before you have them drop off the map?
I think given the public picks and how there's a lot of benefit to taking Michigan State, I would probably take Duke to the Elite Eight in a smaller pool, just because there's such a high chance of them getting there. And then you try to take advantage of the Michigan State advantage there. If it's a much larger pool, this region is very interesting to me. I think this is the hardest region because of having Duke and Michigan State and the aforementioned Virginia Tech that that Ed talked about. And also Duke in the second round plays VCU, who, while maybe not the best team overall, they have like the number three defense in the country after you adjust for strength of schedule. And so that would be a potential trap game just in the very second round for Duke.
Ed, let's hear your thoughts on Duke here. You know, obviously probably not picking them to win, but you mentioned you like Virginia Tech, you know, and you like Michigan State. At what point do you see yourself having Duke fall off, and does that change based on the size of the pool you're in?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to take Duke at least to the Final Four. I mean, they are the best team in this region. Whether you're doing favorites or contrarian, I think you put them in the Final Four.
Okay. And no thought to Virginia Tech, even though you do like them. Justin Robinson back there, still thinking that you're going to go with chalk there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I like kind of the upset potential, but, you know, Duke is the better team.
Exactly. There's a reason that they've got 31% odds to win this tournament, according to FanDuel Sportsbook. So certainly intriguing there. Ed, or let's go back to you, Keith. You know, Virginia Tech, they do get Justin Robinson set to return, but no real ramp-up games for him before we have the tournaments. How far can the Hokies go for you, knowing that Duke is potentially lurking there in the Sweet 16?
Yeah, I think the most likely scenario is they're losing to Duke right there. We like them a lot. They're the best number four seed that we have in the tournament. I think we give them like a 4% chance to make the Final Four compared to public, which has them under 1% because of that huge reliance on Duke. Unless you're in a giant pool, I probably am having them lose to Duke right in that Sweet 16.
So, Ed, let's open things up here for this East region. Any other underdogs you see potentially making a run here, or not just to the Final Four, because you mentioned you've got Duke in the Final Four, but any teams outside of maybe Michigan State or Virginia Tech you could see making a run and facing off against Duke in the Elite Eight, or, you know, making a run at the Sweet 16 as a lower seeded team?
Yeah, probably not making a run, but what really makes me happy about the selection committee is putting Belmont in this tournament. So they're a great program. And they lost in their conference final to Murray State. And the tournament is a better tournament because Murray State's in it. And John Morant is their point guard. You can think of him as little
Russell
Westbrook.
So everyone wins.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone wins. You get John Morant, and that's going to be a great, great game down in the West, a 12-5 game. But to see Belmont get in, and I did not expect him to get in. Mm-hmm. When you look at kind of the bracket predictor people and – they didn't have them in, and I think it's good. I think you want teams like Belmont to come in. You know, they're about 3.5 point favorite over Temple, which would be interesting. Maryland is a great, they're a talented team, and they've played really well at times this year. They also just did the unthinkable and lost to Nebraska in the Big Ten tournament, which is kind of funny to me because Nebraska's just not a good basketball
team. Tim Miles probably going to get fired.
Oh, I mean, he's already talking about his severance. So, Maryland is perhaps vulnerable. I mean, obviously they're going to be the favorite against the Belmont, but I just love that Belmont's in. I think it makes for exciting storylines should they be able to, you know, cash in on their their odds to win a couple games.
We've got LSU also in this region here, Ed. As of right now, don't have their head coach for this game. right. Maybe it's LSU, but any teams, higher seeded teams, you see potentially going down early in this East region?
I mean, the numbers don't particularly like any of these teams to go down. Like, for example, you know, I got Yale at like a 13% chance to win that game. Minnesota is another Big Ten team that is just, for me personally, is just really hard to watch. I just do not like the way they play basketball. So they only have about a 29% chance. If I'm rooting for anyone, I'm definitely rooting for Belmont to kind of make a run here.
All right. What about for you, Keith? Any upsets you see going down this East regional?
I think this region is going to be pretty chalky, but I'll mention two teams. One, you talked about LSU. We have them as the worst number three seed in the tournament. We have Yale at like 14%. I think you said 13, Ed, so right on there. And that's like by far the highest of any 14 seed. So if you're trying to pick a very low-ranked team, Yale might be the way to go. I like Louisville a lot. If they were playing any other two seed in the second round, because I think they were a little bit underseeded, I would be a big fan of moving them forward, but unfortunately they have drawn Michigan State.
So overall, it sounds like pretty chalky for the East region we're going here, including putting Duke in the Final Four more often than not. Any final thoughts from either of you guys? Ed, any final thoughts in the East before we move on here?
Well, I would actually like to mention one thing, just how much better this committee has gotten. And maybe we should wait until the West, because I think Buffalo is the best example. They're a six seed. A decade ago, they would have been at most a 10 seed and probably a 12, and one of these 12s that had 50, if not better, chance of beating their corresponding five.
Right.
And you just don't see that this year. I mean, that's why we're saying chalk, chalk, chalk a lot, because the committee is embracing analytics. And, you know, even more so, I think, this year than last year. You know, like we talked about not seeing a region of death.
Right.
Where, you know, everything is stacked, or a lot of good teams are stacked. I don't really see that. You kind of have to look beyond the numbers to see that maybe in the Midwest. So just, you know, the numbers are winning on this committee and otherwise. And it's never been more obvious to me than when I was trying to break down this bracket last night.
Same vibe for you, Keith, where you're feeling pretty good about how the committee divvied things up.
Yeah, exactly. I always look as soon as the bracket comes out to what our numbers say, and I'm looking for the upsets where they might have made a mistake. And it's kind of a lot less exciting when it's telling you chalk, but that also means that they're doing a much better job. And I think we're going to continue to see that moving forward. And March Madness is still going to be extremely exciting, but I think you might, in general, just see better seating and more chalk.
Chalk can be chalk for a reason, and that can be true when the committee does a better job. We'll get on to the South region in just one second, but first, the most exciting time in college basketball is here, and FanDuel has you covered. Get in on the action today and create a free bracket before the start of the tournament to compete for a share of $250,000 in guaranteed cash prizes. Then come back and bet every day of the tournament. Just go to FanDuel.com/madness to sign up and fill out your bracket. That is FanDuel.com/madness. Start getting your bets in now for tournament time and don't miss out on your free bracket. Limit one bracket per user. Must be 21 or older to enter. No purchase necessary. See full terms and conditions at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Let's move now to the South region, where the public has Virginia going to the Final Four 43.3% of the time right now on ESPN. Keith, I want to start with you. You mentioned maybe the public has some trepidation around UVA. Last year, we saw them go down to the 16 seed UMBC. And on this podcast last year, you and Ed both cautioned Virginia is a high variance team because of their slow pace. But now the public, not in UVA's corner. DeAndre Hunter is healthy this time around. How are you, Keith, feeling about the Cavaliers this time around?
Yeah, I mean, any team with that slow of a pace, and I think they're the slowest team in the country, is always a little bit scary when you're a favorite, because it just means there's a lot fewer possessions, and with fewer possessions, there's higher variance, and you can lose to a 16 seed. Now, I think we give Gardner-Webb like a 0.7% chance of beating them, which is the highest of any 16 seed, but still extremely unlikely. I'm really high on UVA for the narrative that people are not going to be picking them because they're scared of what happened last year. And we have them at 55%. And if the public's only at 43%, that's too much of an advantage to pass up. I think the public is a little too high on Tennessee as a result. And another team the public's really high on is Villanova, just because of their track record the last couple of years. I'm from the Philly area, so most of the people that I'm playing with are huge Villanova fans. So this is probably a year where I'm going to be having them go out fairly early.
Two of the last 3 years, probably not super fun for you there, Keith, based on the way things have gone for Nova. Maybe a bit different this year, though. What about for you, Ed, talking about Virginia still? Are you also into Virginia now that the public has jumped off the bandwagon?
Yeah, I mean, I'm more into Virginia.
Yeah.
Because the public's jumped off the bandwagon. Virginia's always been a program. So they rose to national prominence 2014 tournament year. They've always been a good defensive team. This year is their best offensive team. Top five in the nation when I look at points per possession. Adjusted for schedule. They shoot the ball really well. In excess of 40% from the three, yet not particularly reliant on it. I think I've already talked about DeAndre Hunter, but he's the best wing in the country. He's better than RJ Barrett. He's better than Cam Reddish. So you have that high end player. And Jim, thanks for bringing up that we were cautioning people about Virginia.
I remember because I didn't pick them because of you guys, and I'm very grateful. I actually won the number fire pool because of that. So somehow Keith's words were used against him. So just keep that in mind, Keith. I don't want to, alter the rest of the podcast, but just keep in mind this will be used against you to the fullest extent. Ed, Keith mentioned that the public probably higher on Tennessee than his numbers are. What's your read on Tennessee as a two seed here in the South?
Yeah, I mean, I think Tennessee is a great team, but I'm just not as high on them as any of the other two seeds. I think Virginia got a great draw, period. I like Purdue, but I think they're kind of a lower ceiling team that has played to their max ability over this Big Ten season. Carson Edwards is a great player, but he doesn't really have a lot of help on offense, and he likes to chuck up a lot of shots. This Purdue team is also not great on defense. They have gotten better over the last couple months. So they're also a team that shouldn't scare a team like Virginia. Nova, obviously a great program, and what Jay Wright has done there is amazing. They're just not the same defensively this year as they have been over their strong years over the last four or five seasons. And then, Wisconsin's a very interesting potential Sweet 16 matchup. I like them over Oregon. Wisconsin kind of gets a good draw because Kansas State's best player, Dean Wade, is injured and may not play as well. So, and Wisconsin's is a very well coached team, that could be interesting, but in general, like a good draw for Virginia.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's beneficial, and it better allows us to take advantage of the public being down on them. One interesting thing about this South region is that it has a lot of slow teams in it. Like every team that it plays down in pace, it seems like, is in this one. You got Wisconsin, Oregon, Kansas State, UC Irvine. All these teams are slugs, essentially. So if you're looking for a region to potentially have some fun, we're going to put Virginia in the Final Four, most likely, but it could create some chaos elsewhere because some of these games are going to have very small possession samples. So, Ed, if you're looking for another team here, maybe not to the Final Four, but just to make some noise, what other teams are you looking at here in this South Regional?
Numbers wise, you kind of have to go with Wisconsin. I mean, I do think this Wisconsin team is very good. They're 13th in my team rankings that take margin of victory and adjust for strength of schedule. I'm more confident in them than I am in Purdue. And I guess they are a little bit of a lower seed because they're in there as a five seed. So, Ethan Happ is just a really great player, both ends of the court. And, maybe not the most talent around him, but certainly a very well coached team. That can go pretty deep. Of course, they probably run into a brick wall with Virginia in the Sweet 16, but, numbers and eye test wise, I would say Wisconsin.
And that is the same Ethan Happ who has been at Wisconsin for roughly a decade. So he's the Hunter Renfro of college basketball. What about for you, Keith? Any other teams you could see making a run at the Final Four here in this South region, or is it just UVA for you?
UVA is definitely like far and ahead above everyone else. There's a couple of interesting teams. Like you said, the pace of these teams, I think Villanova is really slow this year. Purdue is really slow. Cincinnati is always has a very similar makeup to UVA in terms of very good defensively and really slow pace. So I could see Cincinnati upsetting Tennessee in that second round. I like Wisconsin a lot, as Ed said, for the numbers, but to me, it's basically UVA or bust.
And Wisconsin is facing Oregon, and Oregon is actually last I saw, I think they were favored over Wisconsin. I think the public may be getting into the 5-12 really? Madness here. They were a 1-point favorite as of 9 o'clock this morning, I believe. I don't recall what book that was at. But it's a very tight game. And I think that is very interesting. The public numbers, from a pick percentage perspective, still favoring Wisconsin. Keith, what are your thoughts on that 5-12 matchup here between Wisconsin and Oregon? And do you think that Wisconsin is going to be facing Virginia in the Sweet 16?
Yeah, that seems kind of crazy. The public must know something that the numbers don't if Oregon is favored. I mean, when I last looked, I think you're right. They were favored by a point. We have Wisconsin at 76% to beat them, which is a lot more than 1 point. And then we also have them most likely to take down Kansas State, who are the weakest number four in the tournament by almost 2 points. So we think Wisconsin versus Oregon is going to be a very slow, low-scoring defensive game. They're both above the 90th percentile defensively and bottom 11% in terms of pace. But we have Wisconsin fairly heavily favored in that region.
So we're not picking Oregon to beat Wisconsin. Ed, any other upsets you like in this South region potentially?
I would like for St. Mary's to win because this is a program that I've been following for a long time. I think Randy Bennett's done a terrific job with bringing that Australian pipeline in. But you know, numbers wise, that they're it's not going to have that. So that's who I'll be rooting for.
Okay. We get St. Mary's. They got the win over Gonzaga last week. Keith, they're the 11th seed here facing Villanova. You mentioned you tend to be in pools that are heavy on Philly peoples, potentially picking Villanova. Any interest for you in picking St. Mary's over Nova because of that?
Yeah, it's not crazy to me at all. I think Nova was a little overseeded this year too. Honestly, in this region, I don't think any upset outside of potentially UVA is that crazy given the low pace. So there is so much variance. Could see Cincinnati losing to Iowa in the first round pretty easily. I don't think any of it's crazy. I would be happy taking St. Mary's over Villanova.
You've mentioned that number fires metrics, not super into Kansas State. So Keith, any interest in UC Irvine going to the round of 32?
Yeah, I could definitely see UC Irvine winning. I think we have them as the highest of any 13 seed in the tournament. So it's kind of similar to the Yale matchup. I don't think that's out of the question either. It's one of those ones where we have Wisconsin winning in the next round. So to me, if you're just trying to sneak some points off, it's not crazy to take, what are they, the Anteaters?
It's always the fun part of college basketball is finding out random mascot names. I hope it is. I don't know, but I really hope. Ed, we're picking UVA to go to the Final Four here, but any other thoughts on the South Regional in general and things you're keeping an eye on here?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely the injury to Kansas State's best player, something to keep in mind. Villanova has always been a big time 3-point shooting team. Their program that I talk about in the 3-point shooting chapter of my How to Win Your Pool book. They've tripled down on that strategy. Last I checked, they're taking more than half of their shots from 3-point range. I have found that 3-point rate actually doesn't affect. There's not a big relationship between how many threes you take and your variance in offensive efficiency game by game. But if Nova's chucking up that many threes,
right,
there's always potential for them to get hot and maybe play some good defense. They're favored against St. Mary's. I've already expressed my not I don't love this Purdue team. So, you know, maybe they are a team that can win a few games.
All righty, let's move on here to the West Regional, where Gonzaga emerging 43% of the time right now on ESPN per the public. But that is the lowest of any one seed in this year's tournament. Keith, you've mentioned that Gonzaga grades out really well based on number fires numbers. So what are your overall thoughts on this West Regional?
Yeah, I think Gonzaga is the team to pick. In particular, given the public, we have them as the most likely team to make the Final Four in the entire tournament at 57%. So I'm fairly high on them. The public seems to sleep on them in general. Mm-hmm. They have the best offense in the country, the number six defense in the country. And there's nothing in this bracket that really scares me. Not even Michigan. Sorry, Ed.
Let's talk with you about Gonzaga, too, because they can be a divisive team at times, especially if you look at, analytics people, tend to be very high on Gonzaga. When you look at Gonzaga here and see where the public is in on them at 43% in the Final Four, what are your thoughts on Gonzaga once you factor in what the public is saying about them?
Yeah, I mean, the public, 2 years ago, Gonzaga made it all the way to the title game. The numbers loved them. Public was at like 8.5% picking them to win the tournament. So this is nothing new, and right. I kind of expected that the public would be off them. Gonzaga is a really good basketball team. I think the most underrated player in the nation is Brandon Clark. He's a 6'8 power forward type, and I like to think of him as a thinner version of Zion Williamson. Mm-hmm. So his 70%. Clark's 70% from two-point range is not quite Zion's 75%. But in terms of offensive rebounding, in terms of blocking shots, Clark's numbers are better than Zion's. And he is just an athlete that Gonzaga – I mean, Gonzaga's had a lot of good athletes, but he's a better athlete than I think anyone that they've had in that program. He can stand up to pretty much anyone in the nation. And when Duke and Gonzaga played in the Maui Invitational – it really wasn't clear which team was more athletic. It was a very head-to-head. It was a very tight game. Gonzaga got up big, kind of blew the lead for a while, and then held on for the win. So they're not going to be scared of anyone. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the public is just giving people who listen to this podcast a gift in not picking this really powerful team, because this is really where numbers come into play, right? Like, you have this team, they play in a weak West Coast conference. How do you adjust for things? And, Keith and I can do that.
Right.
And Gonzaga is a good team.
Absolutely. So the numbers in on Gonzaga once again as the one seed here in the West. Let's move on to the three seed, Texas Tech. Keith, one of the best defenses in the country. They check in as a three seed here. Michigan is a two seed. We like Gonzaga in the Final Four, but who is the favorite from this part of the region to face Gonzaga in the Elite Eight?
Yeah, Michigan is still the favorite here, but it's really interesting in that this region has three of the top six defenses in the country between Gonzaga, Michigan, who I think is number three overall, and Texas Tech, who has the best defense in the country. So I don't think you can really argue one way or another to say for sure Michigan or Texas Tech. I think we have Michigan as about 1.6 points better than Texas Tech. We give them about a 59% chance to beat them if they end up matching up in the Elite Eight. To me, I think most likely I'm going with a Gonzaga Michigan 1-2 Elite Eight here.
Ed, you're our Michigan guy here. What additional insights do you have on this team when it comes to them specifically facing Texas Tech and what could be a really grinded out matchup there?
Yeah, so that's definitely going to be a grinded out matchup. And it's interesting for Michigan. They played Montana in the round of 64 last year, blew them out. I've been warning everyone that it's not going to be that easy again, because things like that don't happen. But then last year, Michigan went to the round of 32, played Houston, another great defensive team. Should Michigan advance here, you're going to go against another great defensive team. And in fact, by my numbers, the only team that's better than Michigan, mm-hmm. when I look at points per possession, adjusted for strength of schedule. Michigan is better on offense. So that's the thing about this Michigan team. They have two guys in Ignas Brazdeikis and Jordan Poole that are wings. Both these guys are capable shooters. Both these guys can be creative off the bounce. Both these guys have also struggled the last 2 months against better competition in the Big Ten. And, I definitely put because of these two guys, I think these two guys will play in the NBA, and I think they will have long careers in the NBA, but they're not quite there yet. And it's a really a matter of whether they can lift the ceiling on the offense of this team. Because, you know, like I mentioned, like 95, 98% of the time, this Michigan team will play defense. Xavier Simpson is probably the best defensive guard I've ever seen in the country. John Teske is 7'1", and I've never seen a big defend the pick and roll better than him. He's got such great feet. So they're just great on that end of the floor. And it's really the offense that is the ceiling.
Absolutely. So it should be a fun matchup. Really hope we do get that one, because that's one I'd love to see. Just like from a pure aesthetic perspective, it'd be really fun to watch. So hopefully we do get that matchup between Michigan and Texas Tech, and it should be a tightly contested game if we do. Ed, let's keep it with you here. You mentioned Ja Morant before. You know, we're always looking for the next Kemba run here. Murray State, the 12 right. seed, facing Marquette. Is Ja Morant the type of guy who could propel this Murray State team to take a run?
Yeah, of course. So let's get his weakness out of the way. He's not a great shooter. About college basketball, 34% from the three. Not a pretty looking shot. But he's got the athleticism. He's got court vision, a lot of assists, and is just a creator on the court. So, you know, Murray State has about a 30% chance to pull that upset over Marquette. Marquette is a very good team. Marcus Howard is a great player. Although one thing, I've heard his wrist is hurt, which is not exactly ideal for a shooter like Howard is. So something to definitely look up when you're filling out your bracket. But yeah, you know, would love to see. You know, it would be great for Murray State and Ja Morant to make a run. I don't know how impressed I am with the guys around him, but he's certainly a talent. And yeah, it'd be great to see an upset there.
And Marquette really did sputter down the stretch, which may lend some extra credence to that thought about an injury there. Keith, what about you? Any interest in Murray State in the 5v12 here in this region?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Murray State for all the aforementioned reasons. We also have them at exactly 30%. I think it's probably the best 12 over the five, the highest chances that we have. And we have Marquette as the worst number five seed in the tourney. Murray State has the 8th best offense in the country, so that's definitely a recipe for an upset.
Any other upsets for you, Keith, here in this West region?
Yeah, I like Buffalo a lot. Ed mentioned them at the very beginning of the podcast. They're extremely balanced. They're in the 95th percentile for offense and 94th percentile for defense. They're fast-paced and playing the worst 11 seed in the tournament in Arizona State. So that's one team that I'm definitely considering. Again, I don't know that I'd have them over Texas Tech or Michigan. But that's the team I'm looking at. I'm also curious, Ed, it kind of sounds like you don't think that the Big Ten has the best athletes in the world, given that every Big Ten team doesn't have much of a ceiling. Is that kind of how you say it?
No, not necessarily. I think Michigan does have a pretty high ceiling. I think Brezikas and Poole are pretty good athletes. I mean, Xavier Simpson, for his height, is an amazing athlete. I think Maryland is a very athletic, high-ceiling team. I think there's kind of some questions about coaching there. So I wouldn't say in general the Big Ten is not that athletic.
So let's move on here to you, Ed, and talk about other teams in this region. Any upsets you see here besides Murray State? Any teams you think can make a run? Thoughts on Buffalo? What are your thoughts here on the West before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, Buffalo should win that first game. So Buffalo's coach is Nate Oates, who we know around here because he coached high school at Romulus right down the road from Ann Arbor. He went up and took an assistant position under Bobby Hurley at Buffalo. And now Bobby Hurley is the coach at Arizona State, who has to win a playing game in order to play his old team in Buffalo. So there's a lot of very interesting storylines there. I see Buffalo winning that game. You know, they're top 20 when I look at the numbers. You know, I they're not supposed to beat Texas Tech in the next round. But I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that happen.
Let's move on here then to the final region of this 2019 tournament and talk about that Midwest, which, as we discussed before, could get a little bit mucky because it is a deep region where the 1 through 7 seeds all grade out pretty well based on the advanced analytics. Right now, the public has UNC going to the Final Four 58% of the time. Kentucky is second there at 21%. Ed, I want to start with you. We mentioned that it's a very interesting region where there are a lot of teams that could potentially make some noise here. What are you doing with UNC as the one seed down here in the Midwest?
Yeah, I mean, I really like UNC as a team. They came here to Ann Arbor and didn't look great. Lost by double digits, but and when we ticked over to the new year, they were outside of the top 10 when I looked at the analytics. They've really surged since then. Kobe White is a freshman point guard that's been pretty awesome. Like the way he splits double teams and finishes at the basket. I mean, this guy's probably a lottery pick. You put him with some veterans like Luke May, and some of the other guys that they have on that team. And you know, I think you really know the strength of North Carolina when they took Duke, the best team in the nation, down to the wire, and North Carolina only hit about 14% of their 3-point shots in that game. So that gives you they have the athleticism, they have the coaching to make a pretty deep run. I like them a lot. I do think Kentucky is a slightly better team just with the talent they have. They're another team that has come on in the last 2 months, kind of since the new year. And I just love the way they have athletes and they get after it on the defensive end of the court. They are top 10 and they're like borderline top 10 when I look at points per possession adjusted for the strength of schedule. I haven't run the numbers yet, but I'd be interested to see what happens when I pull that first Duke game out when their defense got rolled in that game. But you know, freshman playing, they would go up if you took that Duke game out. And I think they're potentially, when you do have a lot of freshmen like that, I tend to trust a little bit more what the numbers say, you know, the last 2 months as opposed to the whole season. Obviously, the whole season is going to be a better predictor overall. But when you have these teams with lots of talent and freshmen, it's interesting to look at that as well.
And that Duke game was a long time ago. So Kentucky and UNC, that game also, you know, it's not super recent, but in that game, it was Kentucky who emerged, came away with an 8-point victory. They're the two seed here. So, Ed, do you have Kentucky over UNC in the Midwest?
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is one of these things where when people ask me to pick a Final Four, you know, numbers-wise, I'm going to give them all the one seeds and then get, yeah, man, that's boring. So, and I do believe, I actually think Kentucky would be, I think that game would be, if they meet in the Elite Eight, I think that game's a pick or Kentucky by a point. So now when people ask me, I will go with the one seeds and the three teams we've talked about as kind of the three top teams and then Kentucky.
Okay. And what about for you, Keith? Here we got Kentucky, we've got UNC, the public pretty into both teams, but definitely favoring UNC over Kentucky. So where are you leaning here in this Midwest as it comes to the Final Four?
Yeah, UNC by far the most likely team. We have them about twice as likely as Kentucky. I think we have them at 50% to make the Final Four. The public is a little bit higher on both of the teams than we are. As I mentioned at the beginning, I think this is a region where stuff could go a little bit wild, and I would be I'd be very enticed taking a team other than the two of them. But if I'm just answering the question, what team is most likely to make the Final Four, it's definitely going to be UNC as the one seed.
So what size pool are you in, Keith, where you decide, all right, the public is super into UNC, they like Kentucky, but I see a lot of variance in this region. What size pool do you have to be in where you say, I am going to deviate from those two teams?
I don't think I could fault you for taking UNC in any size pool because the numbers aren't that, or Kentucky for that matter, they're not that dramatically different from where we have them. So I don't think there's a huge edge there. I just, in a situation where there's a lot of uncertainty, the value you get is from the future knowing what's most likely to occur. And because there's not these super high probability outcomes, you can gain some value in having a higher variance outcome, like picking an Iowa State or an Auburn to move forward and benefit. I play in about a 50-person pool, and in that case, I would say I'm very unlikely to take either Kentucky or UNC.
Ed, what about for you? You mentioned you like both UNC and Kentucky, but probably favoring Kentucky. Is there a size of pool where you start to potentially consider omitting both those teams, or is it pretty much still those two teams for you?
I mean, it's pretty much still those two teams for me. I mean, the one thing that I found in my research is that you don't really want to make low probability choices.
Right. Just to be contrarian. And a lot,
yeah. I mean, you want to be contrarian, but you know, like if I ran a bunch of simulations and you had Auburn and let's see. So my third team, I guess Houston is my third team at 7% to make the Final Four out of this region. You know, if I ran a bunch of simulations and it would show that your win probability decreases, mm-hmm. Making a pick like that. You want to stick with North Carolina or Kentucky, and just go with that.
So Keith, let's assume nobody from your 50 person pool is listening. If you have to deviate from UNC or Kentucky, where are you leaning there in the Midwest region? Which team would you have coming out of there?
Either Auburn or Iowa State. Auburn, I think we have it about 8%. They're our third highest team to get out of there compared to the public, which is just under 2%. The problem is they would obviously play UNC. Mm-hmm. So one team that I really like is Iowa State. We have them at like 4.5% compared to less than 1% of teams picking them, just because I think they can get by a Kentucky team that I don't think is that good, and a Houston team that I don't think is that good. So in terms of picking like a more outlandish team, Iowa State, I think, is one where could pay dividends.
Ed, when you look at this Midwest region, again, we're still siding with UNC and Kentucky here, but if, let's say, it weren't to be one of those two teams, which other team do you think has the best odds to bust up that duo at the top?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can kind of take your pick between Auburn, Iowa State, and Houston. They all look pretty good in the numbers, and, you know, I have Auburn as the highest ranked team out of those, mm-hmm. at 12th in my team ranking. So that's where I would go.
Auburn, the 5 seed here in the Midwest, facing New Mexico State in the first round. So interesting team for sure, coming off of that SEC championship as well. Ed, I think this is kind of one of those regions where the higher seeds all look really good. Any upsets for you here? Because I think that when I look at all these seeds, all these teams in the Midwest, it's a weird region at the top because it is kind of deep, but I feel like it's a chalk one, at least for the round of 64. What do you think overall here early on?
Yeah, early on. I mean, honestly, like the number of lower seeds to win a round of 64 game by the numbers is going to fit on one of your hands.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, personally, when I make recommendations to clients, I tell them not to put too much thought into those first round games. Go with the numbers. You're going to be right more often than not. And if you want to get spend more time with it, think about champion. Think who to pick as champion, and the contrarian perspective there, which we've already discussed. So, but I don't know if numbers wise, I have Utah State at 56% over Washington, and I'm not really seeing anyone, you know, any other lower seed that has a good shot.
Right. So. Yeah, I think that seems like the way to go here in general, but especially here, given how strong those higher seeds are in the Midwest, especially in the round of 64. Keith, any final thoughts for you on this Midwest region before we close up shop for today?
Yeah, the only other thing that I'll point out is Utah State, who I just mentioned. We have them as the best 8 seed in the tournament. They're really balanced offensively and defensively, above the 90th percentile in both of them. So that's a team with potential upset potential outside of the matchup against UNC in that second round.
So that does wrap up the Midwest. And I think overall, the broad takeaway here is to not overthink things too much. Try to leverage what the public is saying and use that to your advantage. And what that says in general is that Duke, Ed used the perfect word earlier, prohibitively popular, because they're being chosen 43% of the time to win the national tournament or the national championship. So check out those public pick odds on ESPN, the who picked whom, and, you know, try to decipher what will be happening in your specific pool. Ed, before we close up shop here, any final thoughts from you on this 2019 tournament? Any words of wisdom? Any parting thoughts for you as you get set to fill out your bracket?
Yeah, I mean, a couple years ago, I used to post analysis on which coaches overperformed or underperformed in the tournament. I have since stopped doing that because I just really don't think it's predictive. And you can think about Tom Izzo, who 3 years ago, I think it was 4 years ago, Michigan State was a 7 seed, made it all the way to the Final Four. And you couldn't say enough things about how good of a March coach Tom Izzo was. And you would even see the markets giving them a point edge over what the analytics said when it came to March. Michigan State hasn't made it to the Sweet 16 since then. And I've just started to kind of stay away from those kinds of analysis. I try to stay away from the narrative that Tony Bennett is not a tournament coach. And just makes your life a little bit easier this week. Not something you have to think about. I mean, obviously, it's going to stick in your mind that they lost last year. I get that. There's some psychology there. But I wouldn't put too much stock into, you know, the small sample size of how coaches have done in tournaments.
So you're saying my Syracuse winning the national championship bracket might not perform too hot.
Wait, your Syracuse winning?
Yeah, that one might not do so hot.
Well, wait, because he's a tournament coach?
It was a joke. I'm totally not going to do that. Absolutely not. I do live in Syracuse. So I'm trying not to get roasted here and, you know, you kicked out of town by the neighbors. But definitely not doing that. So I like that thought process. One less thing to think about when there's already a lot on your plate here while you're filling out your bracket. What about for you, Keith? Any final words, any final thoughts here as people get set to fill out their brackets?
Yeah, I mean, again, because the selection committee did such a good job with the new using analytics system, I think as extremely unsatisfying as it may be, the main strategy this year is like use chalk. And if you're playing in a bigger pool, don't pick Duke as your champion. And if you're playing in a smaller pool, feel free to go with Zion.
It's not fun to pick chalk, but it is fun to win. And the chalk may wind up emerging this year, so keep that in mind as you are filling things out. Guys, Ed and Keith, I want to thank both of you for coming on. Ed, first of all, to you. Thank you once again. Don't forget to check out Ed's podcast, Pure Bracket Wisdom. That is on Apple Podcasts, searching for that there. Breaking down the NCAA tournament. Also his book, How to Win Your NCAA Tournament Pool, available on Amazon and thepowerrank.com. Ed, thank you. Good luck, and hopefully we'll talk to you again next year and in the future as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's always fun.
Keith, chief analyst again at NumberFire on Twitter at Keith Goldner, director of data science for FanDuel. Keith, hopefully the Villanova not making another run this year save you from using game theory against people in your pools against you. So good luck this year, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And thank you to everyone for tuning in as well here to the NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. A lot of podcasts here every week. We have the Daily ISO, our Daily Fantasy Basketball Podcast with Tom Vecchio, PGA Podcast every Tuesday with myself and Brandon Gadula, and NASCAR DFS Podcast every Wednesday, and baseball starting a week from Thursday with the Solo Show. You can get all those podcasts by subscribing to the NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. If you have any questions for me, I am at Jim Sannes on Twitter, JimSannes. Good luck to all of you as you fill out your brackets for this 2019 NCAA tournament. Enjoy watching the basketball, and we'll talk to you all again soon. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire.